Georgia had control of it, at least one big bank in every town of Minnesota, in the bigger towns.
And they were controlled by Coca-Cola.
Same group.
Same group of people.
And the same group that owned the trust company, the Coca-Cola group, another group of them owned the First National Bank of Atlanta. And it has its chain all over. Then you had another chain, the Mills Lane crowd for the CNS Bank all over the state. But when you get down to it, basically, I'd say the old Coca-Cola crowd through there, and they own so damn many other corporations. I'd say the old Coca-Cola crowd has always, from year in and year out. Then they had another thing, too. They had a lawyer up there that just died 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, who was the most intensely practical politician I ever saw, by the name of Hugh Spaulding. Hughes was a devout Catholic and was calling the shots for a bunch of Protestants all over the state all the time, but that never did make any difference.
Was he associated with the Coca-Cola people?
His firm represented the Coca-Cola, the Trust Company of Georgia, the Cox Enterprise, the Atlantic Ice and Coal Company, all those big cotton mill chains, and I know they represented a third of the money in Georgia.
Well, how did he operate?
Quietly as you ever saw.
With whom?
Different people. And I imagine, I doubt that he ever dealt with over a dozen.
Did he have an entree to every governor?
Yeah.
So how did he actually affect things? What would be an example?
Well, he didn't want to say. Be let alone. That's easy.
How about on taxes, for example?
Just be let alone. He used to take this view. See, I levied the first taxes ever levied in Georgia. We got to when I first went to the legislature, the total budget was $10 million. When Ed Rivers was elected in 1936, we had gotten it up to about 12-15. And he had run on a ticket of spending money, every damn thing else, cooperating with Roosevelt, old age pensions, unemployment insurance, free school books, homestead exemptions, every damn thing in the world, increase appropriations for the public schools and everything. So I called him up one day and told him, I said, Ed, we got elected, legislature gonna meet for long, and said, you still going around making speeches, ain't doing nothing else. Said, how are we going to pay for all this stuff you promised? He said, hell, you're going to be Speaker of the House, that's your job. Well, I didn't know what to do, so I went to Atlanta, and the boy in the revenue department, we all had a lot of confidence in. So, I told him I want him to get the group together and work us out a program. Called me up one day and said, I can do it, and if you let me get the head tax man for the telephone company and one for the power company. They're the best in the country. We'll work you out a plan, won't have any trouble. Well, they worked it out and we took it and put it through the legislature, and before I could get the legislature, joined the Coca-Cola company and hired my man. So, but anyhow, that we boosted the revenue up to about $40 million. When you consider that the legislature just adjourned, adopted one worth $1.7 billion. You can see what's happened. But And we came back through later and put in the sales tax and all of them. And the tax structure in the state hadn't been changed since. It has just, with the growth and development and the inflation of the state, it's jumped from around $50 billion a year to $50 million, I mean, to billions.
Who finances campaigns in Georgia, basically?
Well, different people. It all depends on who's running. Gene Talmadge taught us all a new lesson when he came along. He taught his folks to pay the bills. He didn't need so many big ones. All the big folks came along. But you take what we do, we just start taking up a collection from everybody all over the state.
I suppose you got to say a Senate race.
Now you take Maddox, for instance, we got a list now, we're trying to get 250,000 people to contribute to his campaign. We'd rather have a dollar from 250,000 than to have $100 from that many. Because you got more than money can buy when you get them, see, and get them going. But it does, and it's you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised at the folks who give you a check for $1,000, $2,000, $4,000, or $5,000. And all they want is just get on state executive committee or some honorary commission, or the governor's staff or something of that kind. They don't want a darn thing in the world except a little recognition. And maybe he's made a little money down at Bohunk. And he would like to have a little prestige. His wife will have to go to Atlanta for a few big dinners or parties or something. Now they'll yank it out. Now it's hard to get money out of the utilities. No, the only way you get any out of there, somebody has to steal it. Somebody has to pay an expense account. Because you got three or four commissions watching them all the way up and down the line.
And how about Coca-Cola?
Nobody. The only thing is you can't deduct it from the income tax. That's the reason Coca-Cola has been so powerful. There's no restraint on what they can do. Of course, the general law says the corporation can't contribute, but I think it's a damn shame they're convicting these folks now for it, because it's been a universal custom ever since this country's been here.
How much influence does organized labor have in Georgia?
Good bit, but they're not controlling, and they can't control their own vote. When the issue comes between somebody like George Wallace or Lester Maddox or the Talmadges, labor can't control them.
So what can they do, put up manpower?
We got 75% of the labor vote for George Wallace in Georgia, with every labor official in the state fighting as hard as they could. We had the Republicans telling them that a vote for Wallace was a vote for Humphrey, and the union crowd were telling the unions a vote for Wallace was a vote for Nixon. But that didn't make any difference.
What's going to be the effect of Maddox's attack on Martin Luther King on that portrait?
That Lexington governor. One state. You know, a lot of us are hypocrites. I think a lot of we old folks are born in a hypocritical age. I came up in the bootleg age. I still would feel better if I could go in the back door to buy my bottle of liquor than going in the front. I think that's just something in the nature. But these damn people will stand up and tell you they're for race mixing and integration, and by golly, every damn time one gets in the ballot box, he'll vote for segregation in spite of hell. Nobody knows about it. See, it's kind of socially the thing to do is to be for integration. They don't have to argue with the preacher. They don't have to argue with all these do-gooders. They go on keep the mouth at them, but and play hypocrites. You know, that's a, I don't know whether you ever saw it or not, the New York Times made a tape for public broadcasting in which they had this fellow Daniels, who married Truman's daughter, and a reporter from New Orleans and one from Atlanta. Quizzing me and Julian Bond. And somebody tipped me off in that newspaper crowd in Atlanta that they were laying for me. So they gave me an opening right at the first thing. They asked me if I still believed in segregation or something like that. I said, yes, sir, I do. Always have and always will. And I said, you folks do too. I said, you folks here, you newspaper people here, every one of you, when a nigger moves in the same block, you head for Maryland or Virginia one, all of you run. Every one of you run, all of you a bunch of hypocrites. I says, you just advocate this thing for somebody else, but you're not willing to practice it. So Daniels turned right quick to Bond. He says, Mr. Bond, what do you say about that? And he says, well, as bad as I hate to, I've got to agree with Mr. Harris. So we started off, both of us calling a bunch of hypocrites to start with. And so we had a fairly decent program. And Bond and I were very little difference in our views, except he was for total integration and I was for total segregation. As a matter of fact, Bond is smarter than they give him credit for.
Was that the first time you'd ever sat and really talked to him?
No. I had been on another program with him a time or two before. I knew his views. Atlanta Magazine, New York Times, Atlanta Magazine, they taped and ran an interview between he and I. And part of it was taken while we were having dinner at the Bunny Club. And they ran it in Atlanta Magazine, and New York Times got it, and they serialed it and sent it all over the country. Not as full as that. But I knew Bond. I had the advantage of him because I knew Bond's views. And he used to tell me, he said, there was one difference between you and the rest of them. So the rest of them were a bunch of damn hypocrites.
What do you think now is the impact of black voting in Georgia?
Well, they have never yet been able to vote their strength. The only way they can get these niggers, the average niggers, to vote to register, they have to pay him to go register and haul him. The only way they can get him to vote, they have to pay him for going out to vote. Now, I don't mean to have to buy his vote, but he just ain't gonna quit and get off his job and go vote. And if they haven't gotten the money, I remember when we were had this fight here for Wallace and Humphrey and Nixon, couple of days after the election, we both, a bunch of us together, this lawyer friend of mine headed up a Democrat vote. And he was telling me, he said, Roy, says, we were spending all our money with the niggers. And says, 5 o'clock in the afternoon before the election, they come up here and told us they had to have $15,000 more and said we had to go to the bank and borrow. I said, well, Joe, you mean you got to buy them to vote on their side? Says, yeah. Said, here was Nixon and George Wallace both against them, and they won't even go out and support their own man. I think they spent about 30-some-odd $1,000 getting them out to vote, and then didn't get but a handful. They can't vote to full strength to save the neck. They have to hit. They won't turn out to vote for one another unless they got some money. I don't know how to wake it. I don't know whether... Now, when they first started voting, the preachers got all the money. Now, they voted the congregation, but they got too smart. They can't do that now.
How about the blacks in the legislature? What's been the effect of that?
Well, of course, they got some pretty good legislators among some of them. But as a whole, they vote as a block, and they're not very effective. Although they got 15 or 20.
Do you think that race is still a controlling factor in Georgia politics?
Mm-hmm. I do. The Negroes vote on it. It controls the Negro vote. And it controls the majority of the white vote.
Is there anything else you wanted to add that we haven't discussed?